Welcome, everyone, to the Productivity Book Group. I'm your host and facilitator, Ray Sidney Smith. Thank you for joining Productivity Book Group on a live call or on the podcast. We'll be discussing the final part of David Allen's second book, Ready for Anything. It's funny, in the opening dialogue before the call was recorded, I was talking to Michelle, who's on the line with us, and I was joking that, you know, David Allen's book, Ready for Anything, is really more than a second book. It's really just a companion piece to Getting Things Done by David Allen. So I think that's really where we're going to be digging into the book today. This discussion will cover part four, like I said, the final part. It's called Relax and Get in Motion. I really like that subtitle, which includes, of course, chapters 40 through 52. So welcome to everybody on the call. Welcome, Michelle. And David Allen outlined in chapter 40 some success factors for knowledge workers. And I thought these success factors were really amazing. Among them, he talked about maintaining relaxed control and overwhelming amounts of information. So that is to be able to define doable projects from ambiguous direction, initiatives, and pressures, renegotiating implicit and explicit agreements with themselves and others. These are all particular success factors in Ready for Anything that he talks about. And it's really funny because in corporate culture, at least from my outside experience, you know, sort of looking in, it seems that it's not as vital a criteria for performance reviews and those types of things, that is to be able to dynamically manage yourself. And I'm wondering, have you successfully been able to pitch to a boss or to an employer the ability to go to a professional development conference that is based on personal productivity or a workshop or seminar or even training?
On personal productivity, no, but I think that was mostly because I was just too busy all the time.
That's,
I mean,
fair.
I definitely want to do project management development and certain software use conferences and workshops, but
So my question is sort of my corollary to this is, how do you think people can justify the need for personal productivity training or workshops, seminars, and conferences?
Oh, okay. Well, I should amend that to say, although I didn't go to any of those, my former boss was definitely very very behind them. He absolutely believed in the idea of better personal productivity and bringing that back to the team as well. But he's a firm believer in that and definitely would have supported it had I had the time to do it. And we definitely did send other people, usually our project managers to different conferences and things to sort of be able to better lead the groups, our teams in and being more effective and that sort of thing. I would explain the benefits of that sort of seminar or workshop to the boss and explain how, you know, learning different techniques and learning different sort of ways of thinking about that sort of thing can be disseminated to the rest of the team, is very helpful. It gets everybody on the same page. It helps teams work better together and can really change the game. Can really change the game, can change it from being just daily actions and people plodding through, getting just, what they have to get done into more of a team space and more of a, let's support each other and let's that sort of thing. So I think they're really great, and I think that's a way to maybe address it with an employer and try and get approval to go to something like that.
Yeah, I think those are all really great suggestions and sort of a good framework, which is being very benefits focused. I know that for myself, I'm definitely in your camp in the sense that when someone comes to me to say, oh, I would like to do something like this, you know, I'm already a GTD enthusiast, evangelist, if you want to call it that. And so since everyone pretty much gets interviewed, you know, for my company, with me either having knowledge that they're a GTD or me basically saying you need to be a GTD in order to make yourself aware within the context of my corporate structure, you know, the reality is that I don't have that many problems with, of course, further development in that world. So it's actually really well regarded in our world. But I would say that if you're coming into an environment and they don't understand that, definitely going to them and showing them these success factors for knowledge workers within Ready for Anything, and showing and demonstrating to them that you can make those things happen by getting this training. And I think that's really, it's so telling to me when I read the various success factors that if I were a manager and I was not already prepared to do something for you like that, I would be by the time I read them.
Yeah.
And so I think that's certainly one of those really great things that comes out of Ready for Anything, in the sense that it shows you all of these really great dynamic questions, and a lot of them I'm actually using in our discussions, because really they just, if I just lift the questions right out of the book, they're basically our discussion questions. It's really brilliant. But also these like really interesting little nuggets of gems for not only the work world but also for your personal life. And so just segueing into the next chapter, David talks about too much control in chapter 41. And one of the things that I've noticed over the years is I have varying levels of management in particular areas of my productivity system. So I'm curious, do you micromanage yourself? Do you feel like there's some micromanagement going on? And if you do have this kind of what you call overkill in your system, how do you deal with it? What would you do if you were going to deal with it?
I actually, when I first started doing GTD, I probably micromanaged myself. It's funny that you use that phrase, because I'm like, how do you do that? But yes, actually, now that I think about it, yes, I used to.
I think we all did to some extent.
Yeah, but I think it was because, you know, like learning the tool and learning the system and making sure that I got every single little action into my system and stuff like that. And I think now that I'm more comfortable with the system and I'm, you know, I'm comfortable with the fact that I'm doing my weekly reviews now, you know, and have been for a long time now, I have a better command over the system. So I'm not, I've actually learned, you know, like the idea of not putting every single step for, you know, a project in there, but really the next action that you need to do in order to move it, sort of like a bookmark, you know, your pickup place again. And so I think my system is a lot less tedious, a lot less micromanaging, and is a lot more supportive. You know, it's supportive of my goals and of my projects and of that sort of stuff, instead of being like a micromanager. It's very funny. It's funny you would put it that way.
Yeah, and I'm probably in the same shoes, if not a little bit more of a micromanager in terms of myself. And I think that's because in a lot of ways, my system developed, as I might have noted in prior calls, maybe when we were talking about getting things done, the book itself, in the first part of the productivity book group, you know, my system started out as an Excel spreadsheet, you know, a Word document married to an Excel spreadsheet, and I managed my entire GTD system using those two primary tools in my calendar, of course, and the other various tools, but I was primarily working off the runway and 10,000 foot level from my worksheet, my spreadsheet, and the workbook and the Word document. And I felt overwhelmed by the sheer number of things when I initially did my clean sweep. And I never wanted to feel that again. and I have, of course, you know, it's something that comes up when things happen in your life. You know, you're always going to have the unexpected happen, and I think that's why GTD works so well, because it is so flexible and adaptable to life circumstances and to the individual need. But, you know, when I look at micromanagement of myself, you know, and that sort of concept of too much control of the system, I have learned over the years that there's a level of, you know, one of the things, the example I would use is the fact that a lot of people come to me with GTD questions and they say, well, if I were to put all of my tasks, you know, flush out each next action for every project, then I'm going to have so many tasks and my system will become unusable. And, of course, my response is, well, why would you do that? Why would you put all of the tasks possible in there when you are only going from working from sort of a week-to-week or maybe month-to-month basis with regard to your review? You know, if you're doing a weekly review, you're not losing anything. So don't go out there and try to flesh out every task or something. If you feel like you're going to miss something, then put that in the notes or in some type of project support folder so that you don't forget that. But in reality, you're micromanaging at that point. You're taking every little detail and trying to shove it into a system that you know you couldn't do in the next week. And so I did that. I know I did that. And as soon as I relinquished that reality that I wasn't going to accomplish every project in a week that I had accumulated over years of time, and as soon as I could get that into sort of a discrete, this is what's going to happen this week, that's what's going to happen the week after that, and even sometimes the third week out to see what's going to happen in that time frame, you know, during a weekly review, it just all of a sudden started to click and I stopped micromanaging on that level. So, I think everyone has done that.
Yeah, and that's actually a really interesting perspective, because even not thinking in terms of, like, I still like the idea of absolutely capturing everything, meaning like the big project idea kind of thing, but yeah, it's the same idea, like you don't need to capture every single little detail. And I like how you said that about you'll capture it in your weekly review. You won't forget to do that stuff. It's just that it'll sort of get triggered in the next weekly review. So you don't have to capture every step of a project. See, because I come from a project management background, so planning out every step of a project is normal. You know, it's just the way. Right. So the switch to sort of project planning, the same idea, but like a different level of what a project is. Sort of planning those projects, but not to the same. I guess actually to sort of the same level, because when in project management you manage like a huge project that has all the little projects in it, right? But then you don't really go into, you know, so that means Bob needs to call Jane and blah blah blah. You don't put that in there. But somehow when I translated over to GTD, I was like, oh well, a project is, you know, getting something blah 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 blah, which means Bob needs to call Jane and blah, you know, and like putting all those details when they really didn't need to be there. And that it was a really, really huge lesson to learn to sort of pull it up a level. Like just grab the next thing that you need to do. You need to remember is the next thing that's going to kick off the you know, the sort of the flow of the project. And that's a learning curve. I think, you know, for the practice of capturing everything for a new GTD or to really capture everything and feel comfortable doing that. And I think just over time, once you're doing the method for an extended amount of time, then you'll start to feel more comfortable with what level of granularity, and how deep, how far into the future, just like you were saying, you know?
Yeah, I think that makes total sense. And the more I try to separate project management on the sort of hierarchical level and really look at things from a personal project management, I think David Allen even uses the term in quotes, project management. Do you need more of that? And what he really means is more review time. you know, more time to really, you know, in small bursts, you know, to look at the review time so that you're not triggering things. And something triggered me when we were talking about the weekly review and not missing things. I tend to look at that from sort of the analogy of the cream will rise to the top. If I didn't get something done, then it's likely that it really wasn't important enough to be captured in that time. Otherwise, I would have captured it in my system, and it would have been done in the process of the week because it would have immediately triggered as something very important. And if it isn't that level, then it most likely doesn't belong in your system, you know. And or you capture it and deal with it in a weekly review as opposed to wasting your time looking at something that is not as important just because you felt like it was some detail that needed to be focused on at that moment. That's distraction and not focus.
Agreed.
Yeah. And so segueing into chapter 42, David talked about the chapter that's called The Better You Get, The Better You'd Better Get. And I think it relates to sort of, you know, if you want something done, go find the busiest person in the company and they'll get it done. And I really think that's so funny, you know, that in our society we have a tendency to take on more when we are doing more. And I think it's just like, you know, sort of positive energy begets positive energy. You know, you're excited and motivated and challenged by a project, you sort of do that. And I'm so curious, how do you deal with when you have this sort of, waves crashing of new and really exciting things coming at you and how you really manage that? So I'll sort of take it from my perspective, which is someday maybe, someday maybe, someday maybe. You know, when something comes at me and I start to feel like there are all of these great ideas and new things, the most powerful thing that GTD taught me in relation to dealing with that was to put it on my someday maybe list. And that's pretty much how I deal with the waves crashing of new ideas and great ideas. They come in bursts. And I think David even says in Ready for Anything, you know, that he basically, you know, has these really creative bursts and then he spends the next 6 months to a year just flushing them out and making them reality, you know, that he takes these small bursts. And I'm curious, Michelle, how do you deal with sort of the highly productive creative moments and how those backflow into your system?
Well, I also am a huge user of the Sunday Maybe list. I think it's a great way of capturing ideas, not putting them into your immediate next action system, but knowing that you're gonna look back at them in your reviews so that you're not worried that great idea is going to just float away. So I'm a big believer in that as well. But I think so for me, what I do, I guess, is I capture it into my system, the way I capture every item, and it goes into my inbox, and then at some point I'll process it, and it might be, actually, I usually process regularly, pretty much daily. So I will decide if it's something that needs to be acted on immediately or not. And if it's something that's really, you know, into the future kind of thing, then yeah, it goes on my someday maybe list. But, I do that with everything though. So not just the big creative things, but everything that flows in, because, I think, part of what he was talking about was the big creative ideas, but also the other part is just the onslaught of incoming info, you know, the waves of incoming info and requests and this and that, whatever. So I kind of process it all the same way. It goes into my inbox. I kind of do a daily cleanup, you know, at the end of the day or at the beginning of the next day or something like that, and decide where things are going to go into the system. So it's, you know, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about some of the times that it's not really cheating, but it's sort of certainly a different way to manage a list, which is I have heard from several people, and I've done this in the past, of using services like followup.cc or followup.ben or emailing into Remember the Milk or another task management software like Emailing into OmniFocus or whatnot, if that's possible, to go ahead and notify you at a later date to deal with something. And so what sometimes I'll have a really creative idea and I say, you know what, I'm not going to be able to deal with this week, but I really want to rethink this idea later. And how do I make that happen? How do I just trigger myself randomly in the future when I know I'll have more bandwidth to deal with that? And just shooting an email off to follow up then, or to follow up .cc or one of those other services, and then it just sends me back an email, you know, whenever I've dedicated, I know I'm going to have a free moment, usually at the beginning of the day. You know, when I start my day, I have the most willpower, I have the most energy, I'm ready to hit the day running, and those are when a creative idea married with that sort of foundation of the day, I can really make things happen, start to think about next actions and whatever. So sometimes it's rare that I'll do it, but I do it on occasion when the idea is that good, and I'll basically go ahead and shoot myself some of these follow-up emails so that it will shoot back to me at a particular date and time, and then I can just go, oh yeah, that was the idea I wanted to have and I wanted to think about that, and now I can do that. Or I'll actually calendar time to think about it, because sometimes, you know, an idea is really big and I'll want to mind map the idea out, and there's just no way I'm gonna put it on my Sunday maybe list and it's ever going to do anything other than fester there and then get deleted. So what I do is I'll immediately go into my calendar and block out time in my project management calendar to say, I'm going to think about this particular project at that time. Mind map, whether on paper or on digital, you know, do a pro-con list, do whatever I need to do in terms of getting it out of my head and ideas, and that way I have the time dedicated. So just some ideas in terms of how, you know, sometimes dealing with a creative thought needs legs, needs meat, and you need to make the time to be able to flesh those things out.
Yeah.
And so one of the other things in the chapter that he talked about, he asked the question, Are you finding it easier or harder to make important decisions in your life and work? Is there anything to learn from that? And I think that comes from a part in his book where he goes, you know, do you prepare for the worst, imagine the best, and shoot down the middle? And it's a really great quotation, and I think that it's really important for us all to really take sort of that general stepping back and review of, you know, are the important decisions in my life being made, one? And number two, are they proving to be particularly difficult or particularly easy for us in that regard? And I'm curious, Michelle, do you feel there's a feeling of them being easier or harder for you right now or at some period in your life?
I think they're easier for me now that I use GTD. I don't mean to sound like an evangelist, but but the reality is now that it's sort of like my workload, you know, my task load or whatever, and my project load is clearer to me now. I'm definitely more aware of what I have on my plate at any given moment. So it's easier for me to make decisions on the fly. It's sort of like having the information already, the background information already sort of in your psyche, allows for split second decisions, you know? It's sort of like when, an athlete, they practice and practice and practice and practice the same moves over and over so that when something happens, like, you know, I can't give a proper analogy, but when something happens, they already have that history, like that familiarity with what they're doing is just part of their normal makeup. It's just something that they can just do, muscle memory almost.
Muscle memory is, I think, what most people know it as.
Yeah, so that, like, they don't have to focus on, like, oh, so what should I do in this case? It's more like they can make a split second decision, because they're not worrying about, like, okay, how do I do the basic mechanics of the other part of it? I don't know. Sorry, that was a really long-winded, very bad analogy, but.
I think it's really important for people to understand that there is a level of that going on, and for folks who are listening to the podcast, there is sort of entwined in what Michelle is talking about is this concept of deliberate practice. And deliberate practice is a concept that was developed by the psychologist Anders Ericsson. He's a professor, I believe, of psychology at the Florida State University. And he developed this whole concept of the theory of deliberate practice, this idea of doing something over and over and over again from not only from a qualitative perspective, but from looking at the basics. You know, we always hear about these expert performers, you know, whether it's the Yo-Yo Ma. You know, you ask him, what does he do when he starts his day to play a performance piece? And it's, you know, I play the basics. I play the basics over and over again really well. You know, you say that with a basketball player, you say that with an NFL player, whatever. It's studying the basics and really being core and good at those things. And I believe that's the same thing with GTD or any other productivity system. If you understand the core tenets and you start whittling away at the parts that are difficult for you, they become much more easy, and the muscle memory, the brain muscle memory there then becomes much more easy for you to manifest on guard, you know, as soon as you're ready to, on cue, I guess, when you're ready to do it. So really, really great thoughts there. So thank you, Michelle. And that brings us into topic 43. You had mentioned it just in your discussion there about sort of being able to make decisions on the fly. And David Allen talks about trusting your intuition as being the ultimate answer in sort of the complex multi-level self-management of life. And I'm really curious how intuition works in your life, in your work. And while you think about that, I know that for myself, I really do and have worked very hard to install intuition into my own world, and I look at intuition from probably the most basic level of intuition, which is a semi-conscious understanding of what's happening in the greater context of my world. So in my fully conscious mind, we have focus. You know, I'm able to look at something and to read words, to listen to someone speaking to me, to watch something happening. And that's my conscious focus of that moment, and my ability to use my you know, prefrontal cortex, the parts of my brain that control executive function, to be able to say, I'm going to do this, or I'm not going to do this, or I'm having a decision. And then there's this mild consciousness, our semi-conscious, right behind that level. And I really believe that that's what our intuition is. It's what we sometimes call our gut, and you know, a gut feeling, or some type of non-us that's really us making a decision. And really, it's our brain, it's our world, we're making the decisions. What it's doing, though, is it's semi-voluntary, because it's this concept that's happening in the back of your mind. And I really have worked very hard to understand my own level of intuition, so to speak. And I found that the more I trigger the question why, and answer that question, which is really like a Simon Sinek concept, you know, the why, what, how concept of the world, the more that I can answer the question why when I'm addressing a situation, the better and more I can trust the answer that comes from it as being the right choice. And I think that's been a really key insight for me as I've read many, many pieces of material and books and so forth, trying to figure out, where's my intuition? How do I trust my intuition? And how do I know that I'm making the best decision, going back to chapter 42 and blending that into chapter 43? And I think that's really sort of my perspective on that. Michelle, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, that was very interesting. that was very interesting. For me, and I don't know if this is just being a woman, but intuition is, like, it's a sixth sense. It's not something that I work at. but it's the same idea. I mean, I think in a business sense, like, I definitely use intuition. Absolutely. In my world, in my personal life, in business, absolutely. And I think a big part of it, though, is especially in the professional setting, is intuition is a little bit more like experience. It's what you've learned from experience so that you recognize a situation or something. Like, so for instance, if there's some sort of project happening and something seems to be going sideways, maybe it doesn't appear necessarily so cleanly that it's going sideways, but something tells you that it is. That's your intuition, and it's partly your experience of that same sort of situation and what's happened in the past. So I think that is something really important to listen to and to just sort of trust your gut on something that's going like that. I have found that's never let me down. And I think when I was younger, I do remember when I was younger thinking to myself, oh, I should have just trusted myself. I knew that I shouldn't have done that, or I knew that that was going to happen, but I didn't trust my intuition. And at some point, I remember really vividly that at some point I was like, that's it. From now on, if my gut tells me otherwise, I am trusting it 100%.
Absolutely. I'm curious because you talk about this being sort of a feminine quality, you know, that is something that cues you into an emotional part of your brain. And, you know, we have emotional parts of both sides of our brain, you know, when we talk about left side, right side of the brain. But in essence, you know, the dominant parts that control our emotion are really deep parts of our oldest brain. So it's that part of our sort of reptilian brain that's back there in the very deep core of our brain. And I'm curious, you know, that, but not I'm curious, my observation is that what you just said is almost identical to what I said, just in different words, and how interesting both of those sort of perspectives are, and I just think it's brilliant. It's a great, like what you said is probably much more eloquent than what I said in terms of the demonstration of, you know, really how intuition works in other people's minds. And so I really appreciate that. That's a really great perspective, and it cues in for everybody, you know, the reality that we do have to cue in. We have to bring our minds into both an emotional state and an objective state when we're trying to make decisions. We have to use both parts of ourselves as humans. Otherwise, we're just computers, you know, looking at the most logical choice when sometimes the most logical choice is not the best choice. And I think that makes a heck of a lot of difference. And just closing out chapter 43, David asked this really great question, and I want everyone to answer this question for themselves if you're listening to the podcast, which is, what would you do today at work if you found yourself with 33 minutes? Are you prepared in case this opportunity arises? And I think those questions are just really, really brilliant. If you had 33 minutes, what would you do right now? And are you prepared for that? Are you prepared for that opportunity? So if you are listening to the podcast, think about that. I think it's a really great concept. And going into chapter 44, and then we're going to sort of blaze through as we're sort of running out of time here, your chapter 44 is entitled, Your Power is Proportional to Your Ability to Relax. And he talks about this freedom productivity equation. And I think it's really important for us to all sort of take into account how to manage these things that David Allen called outcomes and actions in an external system that is basically objective, and we can go back to it and we can review it and see it in a systematic way. And it's sort of the antithesis of what he's talking about in terms of intuition in the prior chapter, but I think also very important to us in order to stay relaxed. Because if we get too hung up in our emotions, then we do get stymied. And so my question is how do you create that balance for yourself? How do you bring yourself out of an emotional state when you're in one? How do you bring yourself into a more objective, logical state when you're feeling too emotional and vice versa?
I guess I don't. So I guess one of the things that I'm struggling with is the word emotion. I just want to, for me, let me just clarify that I try, like, there's a difference between, how do you say it? It's sort of like the intuition, the sixth sense, the, like, being in touch with, like, sensory perception or something like that, you know what I mean? And emotions. Like, to me, the word emotions is like, you know, people are so upset about something, they're screaming at the top of their lungs, there's tears, it's like, you know, that's not, that if you're working in that place, that you should not be working.
Let's bring us back then, because in terms of emotion is a palette, and sort of you can think of them as colors, and it's very logical for us to then look at why colors, being visual creatures as humans are, that colors respond and relate back to us as emotions very, very readily. You know, the whole world of color psychology. And so when we look at emotions, we look at them as options to respond to stimuli. And so, you know, while you're characterizing sort of what we call sort of mania, you know, really heightened states of emotion, all emotions don't have to be that that high, intense, or whatever they might be. They can be very, very subtle, you know, shades of a color, like mild frustration or mild contentment. You know, they can be very, very subtle. And so, you know, when it comes to emotions, I look at it from the perspective that I can finish and complete a task and check it off, cross it off my list. I actually check. I print out my task list every day, and when I do, you know, I check off the little box, but I actually take the additional effort to cross it out completely. And the reason I actually do that is that once I've checked it off, I actually cross it out and write below it what the next action is, in case there isn't a next action already in my system that I know of. And that way I know what the next action is to put in to remember the milk for me to go back to the following day. But, you know, I get a certain mild contentment from that crossing out of of that particular item. And what I've noticed is that I'm able to trigger relaxation. I'm able to trigger that mild contentment, that emotion, when I'm in a very logical place in my world. I'm just in a get it done mode, and I'm going down my task list. And sometimes I'm a little disgruntled when I'm going through my task list, because some things are mundane that I have to deal with. You know, especially processing emails or thinking about how to manage a particular client's problem, and so on and so forth. When I do that little check and cross off, all of a sudden I get a little smirk on my face, and I get that little bit of emotion. So maybe that's a little bit more insight for you into what I'm sort of asking.
I also like, who doesn't like checking off stuff, right? Who doesn't make a list just so, and like add items to the list that you did that you didn't have there before, just so that you can check it off.
Which is what I love about the iDoneness service. If you don't use the iDoneness service and you're listening to the podcast, the iDoneness service is really great for that. But go ahead, Michelle.
That's great. I get real satisfaction from organizing stuff. From like, you know, knowing like, yeah, organizing stuff. Moving projects along, thinking things through. So I guess if I need sort of a little boost, I might do some strategy thinking or some, you know, that sort of thing. That changes my mood and my perspective on things.
Going up a level, basically.
I think so. Yeah, because you connect it sort of to your bigger goals, and you can see the, you know, the necessity or the reasoning behind certain, you know, mundane tasks that you have to do. And so that I do find that helpful.
So that jumps us to sort of chapter 46, where David asks the question in the back of chapter 46. It says, if you really focus on the bigger picture for yourself, what new activities might you find engaging? And I found the question to be really sort of provocative for me because, you know, I tend to think about the bigger picture in every weekly review. And then he tells me that if you really focus, and I sort of took myself aback and I said, well, what do you mean? As though I weren't focusing already. but then when I thought about it, I thought, but in the narrow sliver of what new activities might I find engaging, really engaged my personal development and my professional development world in terms of, you know, learning new languages. I happen to be a bit of a linguophile and I love just the idea of learning new languages and, you know, having studied many languages is something that has triggered my mind. And I realized the other day that I wanted to learn a new language. And so, you know, I loaded up a couple of flashcards into my flashcard app on my phone. And, you know, here I am. Now I'm capable of just flashing through some cards on a train ride or on a bus ride here or there or a plane. And, you know, it was really satisfying when I reread that chapter because it really triggered that for me. And I'm curious what you might feel would be helpful in terms of process or method or just your own experience in thinking about and focusing on what would make my life better if I focused on making just my life better.
Can you restate that question? I don't quite follow.
Sure. So the question he says is, if you really focus on the bigger picture for yourself, what new activities might you find engaging? And the way in which I took it was that he was basically saying, you know, how do you make your individual experience of life better? And, you know, that might be getting healthier. That might be, you know, watching a particular television show that you've been meaning to watch on Netflix or whatever it might be. And for me, it was, you know, I wanted to learn another language, and I hadn't had an opportunity to do that because I hadn't thought about it. I hadn't focused on it. I hadn't focused on me, you know, and it was a really wonderful opportunity to do that.
Oh, okay. Well, so I guess, yeah, so bigger picture. We all get so bogged down in the day-to-day, you know, daily project, daily tasks, what do I have to get done, that's one of the big parts of the weekly review, and probably the part that I don't do as often as I should when I'm doing my weekly review, really, is the get creative. Like what crazy wild stuff could you be doing that you're not doing that would be fun and would enhance your life enjoyment, right? It's the same question. So it's that actually, you know, is a little close to home, because I left my job probably just under a year ago. It was a great place, great people I worked with, good fun stuff, exciting things that we were doing, but I needed something more for me, and something I needed. I was so involved in my work and so bogged down in the projects and so bogged down in the daily tasks that I was spending, I don't know, 80 hours a week at work. And there was no my own life. So really stepping back and looking sort of at bigger picture really made a difference for me. And it gave me a new sort of path to head down. And I think that is a super, super important thing. I do the same thing you do. I review my horizons of focus every week. When I do my weekly review, it's actually part in my system, so that I've worked it into my system so that I, when I'm adding tasks and projects, I'm making sure that they fall within my horizons of focus and my sort of my areas of focus, so that I'm not sort of watering down my effectiveness in the areas that I want to be effective in.
Right.
So, you know, so that's actually really important to me. But I guess sometimes you really do need to sort of really step back from that and really look at what would make me happy, what could be exciting, what other things in life do I want to be doing? Sort of those really much higher levels, and they really can have a huge impact on your day-to-day world, you know? Does that answer?
Oh, I absolutely agree. Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's a great perspective, and thank you for sharing. I know that, as you said, it's close to home and close to your heart. And I'm personally and professionally, obviously, uniquely proud of you for making the choice to live your best life, you know, and I think that's really important
Thank you.
All of us. But, oh, absolutely, and more than welcome. And I don't get often enough a chance to tell you that, and so I'm glad we had the opportunity. And so, you know, the reality is that, you know, you do have to make the best choices for your life. And when you have these great opportunities to see what you're doing and to make that big choice, yeah, it's as David said in, I think, chapter 42 or 43, you know, there's discomfort in growth. A change creates discomfort and growth, but change is where great things happen. And, you know, and I think you know, what's the, was it, who was it? Someone can make me leave a comment, but I forget who the quotation is from. But if you shoot for the stars, if you shoot for the moon or something like that, you'll end up among the stars, you know, something like that. But the idea is, if you shoot high, you can't leave, because you're gonna end up higher than if you shoot low. And I think that's certainly what you've done. And you know, speaking about shooting high and then not quite setting, you know, hitting the goal, David closes the book in chapter 52 with the chapter, "The biggest successes come from the most failures." And I've been joking as a perfectionist for many years, you know, and the idea of really trying to shirk it and let go of it, I've been joking that imperfection is the new black, you know, so playing up a fashion concept, And so I've been saying it to myself for so many years now, and it's still a, talk about close to home, it's a very difficult concept for me to really hold close to myself. And when I purposefully don't do everything that I want to do to make something perfect, because I know that progress is perfection. And David talked about that here. He talks about, I'm actually going to quote him. He says, quote, "One of my healthiest moments of awareness came recently when I realized that I was going to measure my progress as a human being not by any specific success or failure, but by the percentage of better choices I make over time," end quote. And, you know, it's that very concept to me of being able to know that I'm on a trajectory that's upward, you know, that's better than knowing that every little success or failure is my worth in life, you know?
Yeah.
And when in my perfectionistic mode, that will be it. You know, this particular success or that particular failure will become my full worth. And I believe that's why so many people procrastinate. And when they're in that mindset, you know, which is, oh my gosh, I've set myself up with perfection. I've reached perfection. How am I ever going to top that? Or I'm going to fail in this particular regard. How am I ever going to get back up on the horse and persevere knowing that I've failed in this particular regard? And that failure may be as small as not making a phone call and missing a deadline, or, you know, something major, which are doing something much more egregious in your life. But at the end of the day, if you're alive and you get a chance to live another day, you know, I don't really see it from being that big of a deal. But so my question in these last couple of minutes is how do you define success or failure in your life as a whole? Do you sort of look at it from this sort of phasic approach, the sort of arc of better choices over time, or do you have a different perspective?
I don't know. That's a really tough one for me too, because I wouldn't say I'm afraid to fail. I definitely go after things that are overachiever status.
Yeah.
You know, like I definitely go after.
Not to be afraid.
Yeah, like I go after things that I know are might be tough to. Like I definitely stretch. I definitely you know, go after stretch goals. But but I guess I sort of, in the bigger picture, not in the little picture, but in the bigger picture, I sort of look at it all as success. Like, I definitely believe that we learn from our experiences and from, you know, from the past and from experience, and there's definitely going to be failures along the way. And they make a stronger person. They make for you having a better perspective when you're, and that intuition, like when you're in the middle of something, next time you'll recognize it and you won't go down that route again, you know? So I do have that perspective, but I will say, I will admit that when I'm in the midst of something, if I fail at something, I feel horrible. Like, I feel like, you know, the whole world has ended.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. Yeah, I mean, even, you know, even, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's a weird thing. In the specifics of a situation or a, you know, something like that, I do feel the failure, but in the bigger picture, I do recognize that it's all part of the experience and that it's all, you know, it's all bringing me forward. So I don't feel like, you know, like even like failed relationships or failed whatever, in the end, I do recognize that they taught me something. They've made me the person that I am. They're a good foundation for future, you know. So I do recognize the positive in it, although I do get sucked into the emotion of the failure at the moment.
Right, absolutely. And I think that's appropriate and understandable for all of us to get caught in that moment and feeling it. And I think to some extent, sometimes you need sort of a kick in the pants to feel it so that you are motivated to not have it happen again. I think
Good
it's when
point.
You're stuck in it. You know, I think it's really difficult when you get stuck and mired in that one detail, that one failure, that one success as well, you know, get stuck on it and then your ego takes over or your ego takes over.
Yeah.
And so I think certainly. So it's certainly one of those things. So I think we're going to wrap up the conversation. If you have any final thoughts about Ready for Anything, let me know.
I do, actually. I have, so, you know, in I bought this book, right, I guess probably right after I read Getting Things Done and started getting my system up and running. And I will say that when I was reading it at that point, I probably only read a couple of the chapters because it was too over my head at the time. It didn't feel like it was, but I think it was in hindsight. And rereading it this time, I have to say that this is an amazing little book. Like, every chapter is so thought-provoking. And, you know, and now that I'm, like, deeply into my system, and I don't mean that, you know, that I'm, like, being a crazy person about my system. I mean, like, now I'm, like, I've set my system up. I've been using it for a long time. I'm more relaxed in my system now, so I have a better understanding of how the methodology sort of becomes like a, not a second skin, but like sort of like, it's muscle memory at this point, right?
Absolutely.
And then going through each of these chapters were just so thought-provoking to me, like really just gave me like a new level, a new perspective of understanding my system and what it's all about and how it's helping my life. And I just thought it was a fantastic read, and I'm very, very grateful that you made it one of our books. So thank you, Ray.
Well, thank you, Michelle. I'm really excited to hear that. I feel the same way about Ready for Anything, in the sense that it is really a companion to GTD. It's something that's meant to be read a little bit after having spent some time with GTD as a user and implementing your own system, and then coming back and absorbing each of these chapters. And I think I've said this before, but I'll repeat it again because I think it's really important, is that, you know, there are 52 chapters and they're small. I mean, they're a page and a half to 2 pages long. Some of them are maybe 2.5 pages. Whoa. And you get the opportunity to really take a week with each of these chapters spend a year after you've implemented GTD for maybe 6 to 9 months, and you'll have an entirely new perspective on your productivity and what you do in terms of your not only your daily productivity, but in terms of your review process and your system as a whole. And so I really do recommend that to folks. Note that we're not going to be discussing part 5 of Ready for Anything. Part 5 is basically a review of the fundamentals of GTD. It's about 4 or 5 pages, I think, in the back of Ready for Anything. But I do recommend that if you have been reading along with us or you're going to read Ready for Anything, that you actually flip to part 5 first if you're reading the book and go ahead and check out those fundamentals of GTD. It has the workflow, the processing and organizing workflow diagram, the natural planning model, and sort of a review of the system. Very, very helpful. And I think it's really a useful piece of the book. And so that closes out our conversation for Ready for Anything. And just in continuing the tradition here on Productivity Book Group to end every call with my favorite quotation from our book's, current reading selection, here it is. Quote, courage is not the absence of fear, but rather the judgment that something else is more important than fear, end quote. That was by Ambrose Redmoon, who is the pseudonym for the talent manager, James Neal Hollingworth. And again, another quotation from the book that happens not to be David Allen's own words, but he'll just have to deal with that. I think he'll appreciate all of those quotes since he selected them. And so that finishes out this conversation and of course it finishes out Ready for Anything. I have a few announcements. First, our next Productivity Book Group call, we will be discussing The Front Nine, How to Start the Year You Want, Anytime You Want, by Mike Vardy. Mike Vardy is a productivityist, author and consultant out of Vancouver, British Columbia, I believe, in Canada. And he will be joining us here on the call. So we'll be fantastically appreciative of having Mike Vardy on the call. And also, all information about Productivity Book Group is posted to productivitybookgroup.org. productivitybookgroup.org, and the podcasts are archived there under episodes. Finally, if you've enjoyed being on the live call or listening to the podcast, please review us in iTunes. It helps Productivity Book Group spread the personal productivity message. Thank you, everyone. Thank you specifically to Michelle for joining us today, and here's to your productive life.